Okay, my name is Asuka Hisa, and I am part of the 2026 cohort of the Oral History Summer School, and it is Saturday, May 30th, 2026, and we are here in Hudson, New York. We are actually sitting in the store called Henry on Warren Street, and it is a cloudy, windy, kind of rainy and chilly Saturday morning. The project is the Oral History Summer School Archive titled Community Library of Voice and Sound. And I'm sitting here with Nancy Shaver, who is kindly giving some time for this interview. And although I've met Nancy a couple times visiting the shop when I just first arrived here in Hudson, we don't really know each other, so this is actually the first time that we'll be sitting at length for this oral history interview. So, Nancy, would you kindly introduce yourself?
Well, my name is Nancy Shaver. I have had the shop, I'm not good with years, but I think approximately 28, 29, 30 years. I am a collector of all kinds of things, and I'm an artist as well.
Great, thank you. We are sitting inside Henry. Can you please tell me a little more about Henry?
Yes, I think maybe two, three, I'm not so sure, years before establishing Henry, I organized a group of women to have a shop up the street, which was named Fern. And then after a short amount of time, considering the time I've been here, I became restless about actually sharing visual information, and I wanted my own control, so I moved here. And it's been a workshop and a laboratory for me, for my art ever since, besides a bumbling retail which supports me and my husband.
Okay. I'm looking around, and there are many objects, and I'm wondering if you can share a memory of when objects held deep meaning for you.
I think ever since I was a child, I grew up in rural western New York, and there wasn't much visual input, and I do believe I was always hungering and looking for that.
So you found it
in objects.
Can you...
My grandfather and step-grandmother had a few, I think it was House Beautiful magazines, and whenever we went, I would pore over them, and they never changed. They were always the same magazines, but I think I looked at them down to the pixels.
So actually, you encountered objects through images.
Interesting. Probably, yes. Another way was in where I lived, every house had sort of a junk pile, and it was out back, and it was a pile of things were used and broken in tin cans. And I went there often hoping to find a Victorian gem that would interest me, and that did not happen.
What kinds of things were interesting in that pile?
You know, not much. It was broken glass and cans and so on. But at one point, I found this planter, which was popular in the 50s, you know, of cartoon characters and so on, and it was in good shape, and I took that home. And then, to my mother's embarrassment, we found that it belonged to the neighbor originally. And it was of a cultural kind of image, and I did not love it, but I loved finding it.
I'm hearing a love of the hunt or discovery.
Yes, it's very important and very part of the shop, but the discovery is maybe about the origins or the use of the thing. It's not about perfection or a controlled idea of beauty. It's about history of the objects through personal use and where it began.
Can you describe a object or objects that have really transported you to research or learn about culture deeply?
Well, I think all objects do that, and it changes and it grows and disappears and returns the interest. That box over there with the mansard roof, I found it a number of years ago, and I thought it was the most wonderful thing because it looks like someone had a specific desire about making it, and the desire in my mind was related to perhaps religious ideas about formality and decoration. And I tried to sell it here, probably, and then it had to make room for other things because there was no interest. And at this point, I'm bringing back things from my storeroom and enjoying them and hoping that years later they may find a home. I like how sort of abject that is, while still retaining its power of desire of grand, a grand container for something important.
Thank you. I wanted to listen. The bell was on the recording.
And I'll just say, on the shelf above to the right is a hat for an Afghanistani baby. And these hats were just super beautiful and a lot of work. And I think they, as a friend from RISD told me, they were meant to show how much the baby was loved and to be loved because of this. And then just last week, someone came in and said they were made to look like flowers so that the devil and bad spirits would look down and see a flower and not a child to harm.
These are extraordinary stories. I like the stories that are cultural and embedded in the objects or the intention of the objects by makers that you learn about. But then I also enjoy the imaginings of stories based on found boxes and...
The stories are found in their own way as well, because it's a part of imagination. I'm not a scholar, and I don't study anything, and I only find it from looking at it or intuiting the visual object and feeling the desire of the person who felt the need to make it, or in industrial objects, the desire to control culture or human beings, visual beings.
You mentioned that this shop is a laboratory.
Yes.
Can you elaborate on the laboratory?
Let's see. I moved an hour and a half away. I moved from New York City to Schoharie County, which is one of the most rural counties in New York State. And it was in perhaps the few years of my being seen a little bit as an artist, and I naively thought that that would continue and I would make my living making my art, which proved not to be true, because I did what I wanted and I didn't follow any kind of path, and so of course it was in jeopardy. And after I moved to Schoharie County, I realized I had no skills and no way. Of course, I always knew I had no skills. I had no way to make a living, which was very frightening. And the thought of going to Burger King or McDonald's was abhorrent. So, and I realized my only skill was my eye and my love of things. So I started to go to flea markets and such and try and sell things. And I had, in a way, always wanted to be a shopkeeper. When I was young, I read, The Scarlet Leather Man. Oh, Nathaniel Hawthorne. Yeah, and there was a story, A House of Seven Gables, and it talked about Hepzibah and her scent shop, and I just loved that so much, the idea of having a little shop and living above it. I have never lived above my shop, an hour and a half away. And so the intertwining of objects and making art was something that existed from the beginning. And my love of objects came out of the realization that, of course, I could never afford art since I could barely think of a job for myself. So I thought, well, I'm going to find something that's as good as art in the ordinary world. And in fact is, from my husband, who is a self-taught sculptor. I've realized that art functions, unlike a lot of things, on just every level that exists, from childhood to old age.
You say you have never lived above the shop, but is there some kind of living that happens in this shop?
For sure. In the last few years, I would say that my social life takes place in the shop, because where we live in the woods, and the neighbors, we don't know the neighbors. Everyone is isolated in this rural way, and the differences between sort of people in political ways are quite big. And here in Hudson, as I thought from the beginning, there are people of like mind, and I found a lot of artists who I enjoy talking to here.
Could you restate how long you've been? I don't know if you did state, but could we restate or state how long you have been in Hudson?
I am not sure because I don't pay attention to years, but I think I've probably been here maybe totally between the other shop, which was called Fern, and here probably about 30-some years.
And living in the region for more than that?
I never lived in this region. I always lived in Schoharie County. I came to Hudson because there were antique dealers who lived near me who did have a shop here, and I admired them and the kind of things that they sold, and I felt like I needed a more, a more sophisticated crowd who could appreciate the idea of desire and use and imperfection, and that would not have happened anywhere in Schoharie County. Perhaps there's more now, but still it's difficult.
How? What is difficult?
I think people do not realize how important visual thinking or visual intelligence is, and how important it is to one's own life. And it's only seen in very specific, maybe even guarded instances, or through the general culture of, devices.
So it's quite a commute from home to here.
Yeah, it is, and I have done it most of my life. But when they put that traffic circle in on the way to Hudson, somehow traffic circles frighten me terribly. And I asked my husband, Jackson, if he would drive me. I only learned to drive in my 50s, having been too frightened to drive as a 16-year-old, and not having needed driving when I didn't drive. And so then I moved to the country, and I had to drive, so I learned. And when the traffic circle went in, probably, I don't know, a few years ago, it was probably also at COVID time, I asked my husband if he would drive me, and he loves driving, and he didn't particularly like my driving, so it worked out just fine.
So he comes into town as well?
He drops me off and picks me up. 3 days later.
Okay. Oh, so 3 days later, so you have a place here in Hudson? Okay. Can you take us back to a time when you realized I'm an artist, or art became part of your life?
Well, that's an interesting question and quite difficult. I don't know if there was a realization. There always was a desire. And because I had no experience with art very much, having not a part of my childhood, and it was very difficult to feel, which a young friend of mine here in Hudson, who's a writer, calls confidence. And the confidence of the experience of making art has been hard won. And earlier on, I felt I didn't have the right to call myself as an artist. It felt pretentious. And that lack of confidence has led me to have a distrust of power, which has made career slightly difficult. But at this point, at age 80, I will say I am an artist, and say that I am proud of my independence.
How do you make your art?
Well, that's an interesting question as well, because it contains the question of skill and lack of skill. And the making itself is not a thing that holds me. I'm very impatient, but I love sitting in my chair and thinking about it, and thinking about how far I can maybe reach the impulse back to maybe just being human. This week, I have a friend who visited, a 40-year-old friend named Jean-Philippe Antoine, and he's French, and I met him when he was young, and he did not know what to make of my art. It was just so out of his experience. And he is an aesthetics and a philosophy professor for long years, and we became friends because I would refuse to believe that I could not reach these essences because I did not have the information. I wanted to know for him all these philosophical things that he could tell me, so I could think, well, I could find that in the ordinary. And we became friends because he did not understand my work, and because I wanted his vast academic knowledge about how things exist.
That's beautiful.
And he came to visit this week, and it was fun.
That's a beautiful way to have a friendship.
Yes. It's what I believe friendship is. And it is the friends I have here in Hudson now, which are friendships I have not had as a child or an adolescent, really. And it's all based on trying to understand things.
Can you tell me about some people who are or were important to you in your life?
Probably Walker Evans was probably one of the most important people. He and also the poet William Carlos Williams, because they both gave me the thought that I could think about important things through the ordinary, or beautiful things through the ordinary, whatever that word may mean.
Would you say surrounding oneself with the ordinary to find meaning brings a life less ordinary?
It makes life less assumed and more particular. And I think for me, at this age of looking at art and trying to find models for art, I realize that artists find and discover the particular, which moves them to express that.
Could you describe what a day is like when you're not here at Henry?
Oh, I'm very, very fortunate because of my dear husband, John Jackson, has made it possible for me to sit in the studio 4 days a week and look and think. And he does all the errands and most of the haphazard cleaning. And I make dinner and he makes breakfast and he reads me the Times and I sit and fuss with some whatever work I'm working on, because I have to always be doing that. And then we do things together. He is a hoarder and a collector and just this wonderful, generous person.
So you're in the studio if you're not here?
Yes. Earlier on, when I was sort of less involved, when I was working or more frustrated with working, I would say to Jackson, I need to look at something. And we would go off junking and looking for things. And it was always an excuse to buy whatever that I fancied or touched my imagination. But now for the last number of years, I have not needed to do that so much, or hardly at all. And we are overwhelmed with objects.
You mentioned that you'd been here for, let's say you mentioned the number 30 years, but just say 30 plus years-ish. what's been great and what's been not so great?
When I moved here, I think of Hudson as a town of extremes. In the 30s, it had a billion speakeasies. And when I moved in, it was overrun with antique shops. And for me, that was just heaven, because every shop was incredibly specific. And going in and seeing that the choices that individuals made because they loved them was better than going to a museum. And I frequented them all, just gathering visual information. And at this particular point, Hudson seems to have gone the way of dress shops, and I find them somewhat boring. I want to say that I've been here in this shop for so long due to the generosity of my landlord, who was the partner of John Ashbery, and I feel like he has given me a grant to be here, and it's through his appreciation of art and textiles that the shop has existed for so long. And not only that, 15 years ago, through talking to a friend a couple of houses down the street, or a new friendship with artists who moved down there, Max Goldfarb and Alison Strafella, walking to the farmer's market, I would complain about why there was no art I could enjoy in smaller places. Why did I have to go to New York? And so I guess it was I or we presented a letter to David Carmani asking him if we could use his windows for our installations. And we established, the three of us, this entity we called Incident Report, and we would organize and put art in the windows next door and change it, and it really didn't have any agenda except for the person on the street to see it. And it was sort of extraordinary, because I think people understood that it had no monetary, no value other than what it was. And I think this was the beginning of my interest in working with other people, which I do now in a group called WOOF, which Max is a part of.
How long did the incident report project
It lasted about 10 years. And then, I don't know, I think maybe we got tired of it or it didn't have a way to expand, and maybe just doing it, given the complicated upness of an artist's life in terms of family and making a living, it just became a little bit troublesome. And we passed it on to other people for a while, and then it just did not exist anymore. But I think it moved into this project that is now called Wolf.
And this, the store windows were right next door.
Yeah. And now next door is the Flotart Foundation, which is a foundation for John Ashbery. It's in, let's see, transition right now. It's not quite open. But Allison Strafella, in the fall, started a program of art installations, which happened there and was really wonderful for a few months.
That sounds very fortunate.
Yeah.
Is it the same building? Is this the
yes.
same building and the same
mm-hmm.
landlord? I really am interested in learning more about your landlord, because there's such a generosity of spirit, but then also an understanding of integrity.
Yes. He has a very big art background and spent part of his life directing a gallery in New York, which is still in existence. It's called Tibor de Nage, very famous for innovative, particular artists.
So, in back to Henry, and over the years, can you describe some? You talked about your friend coming to visit, and I imagine that you have friends who come to visit. Are there new friendships made or funny stories to share in the time that you've sat here and welcomed people into Henry? Or had your doors just simply open?
You know, I don't have a very good specific memory, and because of that, I don't have many anecdotes about Henry. Except that I am more than reluctant salesperson. I like to leave people alone the way I like to be left alone in a shop. And I will only respond if I feel like there's some interest. Otherwise, a hello will do it. And at this point, I have a young friend, an artist named George Liu, who comes every Saturday, and we have fun arranging and talking about art and so on. And he, as he sits here, says, "Welcome," to everyone who comes in. And it's hilarious to me because I never thought of saying welcome. And so we laugh.
But you're having a good time with George.
Oh, wonderful time with George. I feel like I have met, a soulmate. But he only happens to be 50 years younger than I am.
What's interesting about that?
It's interesting that there can be a basis for art which is as strong as a building, which belies age, maybe gender, in a person.
Through your relationship with George now, who comes every Saturday, has George brought friends over to see the store?
Yes. Last Saturday, George and his partner Ryan and I sat here all afternoon. George was crocheting, which is his form of artwork, and Ryan, probably in defense, picked up some scraps of fabric I had here and started sewing them together, and I was working on my blocks.
What does working on your blocks mean?
I often bring blocks which are part of this structure called blockers, and they're covered with fabric, and the fabric is stretched and stapled over these blocks that are made out of 2x4 lumber, which are cut to be as square as possible, which isn't quite square.
And what are they for?
They're for this structure called blockers, which are between sculpture and painting. And they're an assembly of 9 blocks, very like the quilting pattern called Night Patch. And then paper and paint join the fabric.
Where is the fabric from?
The fabric is mostly from Core Values, which is a thrift shop in Stamford, New York, which sells women's clothing cheaply, and the Salvation Army. The clothing is mostly from big box stores.
We're almost coming to a close. We have about 20 minutes more. Is there anything you'd like to talk about or bring up or say?
I don't think so. I'm not sort of good at that. If you have any other questions, I can answer them, but I'm not really much of a conversationalist in a certain way. I don't know what to say.
I have a very strong sense of a relationship to this place and this part of the country, but have you been elsewhere?
Not really. Let's say I am pretty much adverse to traveling right now. We went to a wedding for a dear friend a couple of weeks ago, and I felt I had been away for 100 years, and that it was a difficult a little bit of a difficult to return to understand to my routine. And I think that's part of going older, but it's also a part of really, really being happy in my particular situation right now and not needing to go anywhere else. I am going to California in November. And the question is how I will get there, because I hate flying, not because I'm scared, because they treat you so badly in these tiny, tiny seats that are so uncomfortable. So I'm fantasizing about taking a train. I don't know if I'll do that. And I don't know if Jackson will come with me. He hates to leave home, even worse than I do. And although I'm perfectly fine going myself, he does not like, he likes to accompany to make sure I don't trip or lose something, because I'm always losing things.
Mm. Maybe George can come.
Oh, there's a thought. Maybe I could get George to come. Anyway, we do enjoy being together, George and I, and we laugh a lot, which is great fun. And Jackson has also loves George, and they have a funny time together.
That's great. So George has become a good friend, and you mentioned that he comes every Saturday. Are there other routine? And you talked about routine and not, you know, being happy in it. And you also mentioned getting your coffee as you do across the street. And
oh yes, that's what I've learned from being in Hudson. I've learned how important peripheral relationships are. I love going every morning. I'm here across the street and getting my coffee, and the young people there are so kind and nice, and it's just a pleasure to see them. And there is an apartment building adjacent to this building, and I really like seeing the residents and their families coming in and out, and sort of the long-term residents. It is a relationship of some sorts. There was this old man who was younger than I named Sam when I first came here, and we would always greet each other every morning, and it was just wonderful to see Sam. And he would in some way look after Henry when I was not here. And a number of years ago, he had a tragic accident, and one morning I came and he was not standing outside, and I knew it was not good. Anyway, those relationships are very important, I think, in this time when people don't think they have relationships. And it made me realize at home there's this Italian restaurant that I've gone to since I moved there about 35 years ago, and I know we know each other as customer and small business, which is in its own way a pleasure. And I've gone to the same bank, and at this point all the tellers have changed, but for a number of years it was like we grow old together, the tellers and I, and I just imagine their peripheral knowledge in relation to my peripheral knowledge. That was a little appalling to think of them knowing my financial information, but actually hilarious given how distant the relationships are.
That is great to hear. I feel that that was something that developed over time, maybe the peripheral relationships.
Yes, yes, yes. And what I know from this shop, I know that Americans are only interested in the new, whatever that means. And that perhaps does affect politics as well, in that we do not give credence to these peripheral relationships. And I'm as guilty as that as anyone else, given where I live and feeling so, I guess, removed from my neighbors in most accounts.
Yeah, but perhaps through life, like earlier in earlier days, you may not have had that, or maybe you did. I don't, because moving to,
you know, my family lived basically a somewhat isolated life. So the pleasure of Hudson is finding a community. In fact, even if it is through peripherals in terms of customers and just people who return to see, and the neighbors about, and the various shops about, to realizing that I'm a peripheral to a number of people as well.
Mm-hmm. But I heard the word kindness and feeling that as a real attractor, obviously, but when I hear you just getting a cup of coffee and the feelings that arise with these routines and these people through a
peripheral, yeah. They know what. I was a waitress in my earlier life, so I understand. I often think that perhaps psychologists should have to be waitresses for a semester, a year or two, because observation of people is just so part of that ordinary life, and what it means, and what you see, and what you think you see, and all of that.
Yeah, that contact with people,
yeah,
and the range of personalities. And now I look around Henry, and all of these things were made by people, and your experience.
Yeah, various people, various skills, and various relationships or skills. Some of the quilts here are extraordinarily fine, and craftsmanship and desire for perfection of stitch. And others could care less, and I do like that range.
Yeah. It's very open-minded about people.
I find that that skill is best when used in relation to need, because otherwise it can become very intimidating, which is stultifying.
So you mentioned your blocks and the blocks and their shape, size, sort of relates to quilts. And I see quilts in here, and I see a lot of textiles, and but I also see artworks. So there's a mix of visual art and craft a bit in here. Is that... I mean, you're back to the laboratory, right? trying things out? Have you tried? Is a particular? Is it all old?
No, not necessarily. Right now, it's more textiles than ever because I can't find the kind of objects that I used to find in the amount of time I have to shop or find things. I like industrial things and things that are mass marketed for their shortcomings in terms of cultural ideas, and it all has a sometimes ridiculous human quality to it, and I think I love shortcomings and more than the perfection of an idea or a thing.
Can you tell me more about the beauty of shortcomings, or what interests you in shortcomings?
Shortcomings always, the way a block that isn't quite square makes one very much aware of squareness or perfection. Shortcomings are an indication of maybe a perfection, which is a very tender thing. Whether it is made purely for commercialism or not. And maybe it's where commercialism fails, which at this point is a pleasure to me.
Well, we've done it.
Good.
Thank you so much.
Oh, well, thank
this
you.
This was a pleasure, and I think we had a great journey. Good stories. And
oh, good.
Thank you. We're just going to... Sorry, I'm going to ask for one more thing, which is just to sit quietly for about a minute. And, of course, if there's anything that comes up in this minute and you want to say something, feel free.